Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. And Jim, we've been chronicling, for the most part, the lack of people getting into the 2012 presidential race. We're starting to get a few more hints of people making decisions relatively soon. And one of the ones that's been rumored, even though he hasn't been in office very long, is New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. But he has, to this point, taken himself out of the running. In fact, here's what he said just a couple of weeks ago to Fox News' Neil Cavuto.
You have to be really in your gut and in your heart ready to be president of the United States if you decide to run for that. And I simply do not have the desire to do it, nor do I think I'm ready.
Well, that's certainly a candid admission. Most people who are being rumored obviously think they're the greatest person for the job. But what Christie said to National Review, I believe it was Dan Foster, saying now that he believes he could absolutely win the nomination and could win the general election. So even if he may not end up in this race, he certainly thought about it more than he's let on before. And if he doesn't talk himself into it, he may talk at least a lot of conservatives into a draft Christie movement, given the lackluster field we've seen so far. What do you think, Jim?
Well, the suicide threat from earlier would seem to be the most definitive statement you could. Although, I got to say, Greg, the concept of zombie Christie strikes me as a very appealing candidate. So if he does commit suicide to prove he's not running and then gets reanimated as a corpse, that is a powerful, powerful option for the Republicans. It's funny when he said this statement that I could win. I believe it was Ala Pundit of Hot Air, characterized it. It could really come across as a little arrogant or a little presumptive. And it's worth noting that he's saying that he could win. Greg, you or I could win. Doesn't mean we are.
Right.
And what he's pointing there is that Obama, barring some miraculous economic turnaround, Barack Obama is probably going to be vulnerable in 2012. And Christie has had a certain amount, probably a surprising amount of success in selling an economically conservative message of limited government, and particularly the need to rein in promised expenses that are just not affordable if we're going to retain our economic competitiveness to audiences that are not always receptive. The deep blue New Jersey and you look at him meeting with these town hall meetings. These are not packed with Republicans. These are not, rank and file Tea Party crowds. People go in very skeptical and walk out nodding and recognizing that, well, one, he's playing honest with us, and two, he's, doing stuff that needs to be done, even though it's unpopular and nobody really likes it, nobody really enjoys it. That's kind of the opposite of Barack Obama, who is doing everything possible to avoid making any hard choices in the fiscal arena, or some would argue in almost any front. What I'm kind of hoping – it's interesting that with the zombie comment earlier, I'm taking a supernatural theme to our analysis today. I'm hoping Christie could just possess whoever the Republican nominee is and just kind of talk the way he does, make his case the way he does. But I think Christie recognizes that, besides the challenges, if you run for president after being governor for roughly a year, you can't use the experience charge. And in fact, you'll set yourself up for an experience charge to be used against you. And then the second point is, if he doesn't think he's ready, let's not drag him kicking and screaming into the presidency and, put him into doing something he doesn't want to do. If he thinks he's not ready, let's trust him. I think he's, knows himself well enough. And there's something delightfully refreshing about a politician who recognizes the presidency is a hard job and he may not want to step into it yet.
One of the reasons, as we mentioned before, that the idea of a Christie candidacy is so appealing is because a lot of the names that have been bandied about who will likely run in this campaign have not drawn a tremendous amount of enthusiasm, either as a result of their previous record or due to the fact that some people just don't think they can get a broad base enough of support to take on Barack Obama. One of the names that's been out there this cycle, the 2008 cycle, and maybe even the 2000 cycle, I can't remember that far back, but that's former House Speaker Newt Gingrich. He's had a little bit of a bizarre week because we at first were expecting this announcement on Thursday that he'd be announcing the formation of a presidential exploratory committee. Now there may or may not be an announcement on Thursday, but if there is, it absolutely will not, according to Gingrich's aides, be the announcement of a presidential exploratory committee. So this is a guy who's clearly flip-flopped on even running for office. It's a guy whose time as Speaker was full of highs and lows, and perhaps one of his greatest lows came after the time he was Speaker, and this little gem of an ad with one of his successors.
Hi, I'm Nancy Pelosi, lifelong Democrat and Speaker of the House.
And I'm Newt Gingrich, lifelong Republican, and I used to be Speaker.
We don't always see eye to eye, do we, Newt?
No, but we do agree our country must take action to address climate change.
Well, neither Pelosi nor Gingrich will be up for Oscars, clearly, after that performance. But the idea of Newt Gingrich on the couch with Nancy Pelosi will hopefully hurt his campaign a little bit. I'm not saying what the result of the primary process should be, but that can't help him, and all this back and forth can't help him either.
Greg, I just want to observe, I've seen hostages read statements from their captors with more natural flow and easy delivery than we saw heard from those two. But again, maybe that was the environment they felt like sitting on a couch with each other.
That's probably true.
The thing here with Gingrich is that he seems like almost every cycle he's done some version of this. You look back to 96, 2000, 2004, 2008. His name always gets mentioned. Obviously, if you're at one point effectively the leader of the Republican Party, people are going to turn to you. And he always makes some noise and he gives some speeches, and it always tends to coincide with when he has a book coming out. And then he doesn't. And then he says, I'm not going to run. And in 2007, he had the most dramatic, the most clearest example of this, in which about, 24 hours before he announced that he wasn't running, reporters were being told, this is it. He's going to announce he's forming an exploratory committee, et cetera, et cetera. So this doesn't help him. As somebody put it on Twitter last night, don't botch the kickoff if you want to win the game. Obviously, look, there's a lot that can happen between now and when the Republicans choose their nominee. But Newt has his baggage. He has his problems in his personal life. He's got his it's kind of fascinating to hear Tom DeLay, of all people, describe his management during the last government shutdown as just a train wreck of runaway egos and not seeing the big picture. There are a bunch of conservatives who are going to be a little wary of that. And just kind of having this feeling that if Newt gets the nomination, it's just a matter of time before he'll, he's a brilliant guy who just periodically says or does phenomenally stupid things. And, it's one of those strange contradictions of who he is. But, he'll have his chance to get out there, at some point. Maybe not this week, but whenever he and all of his advisors get together and decide, yes, we are officially announcing. And, he'll get his chance to prove himself on the hustings like everybody else. So good luck, Newt. After this kickoff, it appears you're going to need some.
Yeah, between the ego of the government shutdown, which obviously didn't go as planned, and then I believe it was 1998 when he said he would never make another speech without mentioning Clinton's affair with Monica Lewinsky. Oh, by the way, he was having an affair of his own at the time with the woman who happens to now be his current wife, but not exactly the most consistent on some of the issues he's been talking about.
Greg, Democrats wouldn't raise that, right? There's no way that'd be an issue in the general election.
No, never, never. They would never do that. From watching what they've done in Wisconsin and all these other union debates, they would never resort to anything below the belt to go after a Republican candidate or office holder. Not at all.
Wisconsin, Tucson, yeah. Just pick a place on the map, and chances are there's some instance of liberal demagoguery associated with it.
Speaking of liberal demagoguery, let's move on to the third and final martini today. And we've talked about this before whenever big spending fights come up. But the issue now, of course, with the Republicans trying to really get a continuing resolution for the rest of this fiscal year, that's not going to happen, at least imminently. It looks like it's going to be this two-week continuing resolution. But as the Democrats go after the Republican strategy here, and even this very short two-week continuing resolution with $4 billion in cuts, you have Democrats bringing out some of the old talking points, with Barbara Boxer saying on Tuesday that House Republicans want to strip government funding of PBS because they have a vendetta against Elmo. They also have a vendetta against health care and against clean energy, apparently, but especially a vendetta against Elmo. Boxer saying that the cost of 4 hours of the Iraq war would be enough to keep PBS funded and Elmo on the air. Well, I'm guessing that 4 hours of the Iraq war would also probably pretty well fund Charlie Sheen's recreational activities. It doesn't mean it's a good use of taxpayer dollars.
Well, one, that's why I've called for the deployment of Oscar and Big Bird to Baghdad to stabilize the situation. It's rather striking. We knew that inevitably that whenever there's any talk of cutting money to PBS or the Corporation for Public Broadcasting or federal funding for any of these entities, inevitably they roll out the Muppets. And I just want to observe, Greg, you had people like donating kidneys to get a black market Tickle Me Elmo a few years ago. So we know that Sesame Street characters, phenomenally popular. As I do this from my home office and look into the family room, there are Sesame Street toys strewn everywhere, and I had no taxpayer subsidy for those. You pay through the nose for those. You pay through a felt nose, in fact, for these sorts of things. You're paying through your ping pong ball eyes for Muppet toys. So the idea that this phenomenally lucrative franchise needs federal funding to continue is ridiculous. And it's also worth noting, Greg, you don't have kids, correct?
That's correct.
All right, so you're not watching as much Sesame Street as you used to. I noticed that when we were discussing the Democrats rolled out Arthur, the program has corporate sponsors like Chuck E. Cheese, CVS, Coca-Cola, and a whole bunch of other big-name corporate sponsors because, you know, it's a good thing and they really like Arthur. And whatever dollars don't come to them from the federal government, is it really that unthinkable that these, you know, well-funded corporations could dig deeper and, you know, sponsor Arthur to the tune of whatever money was lost? You know, if you're going to cry poverty, you really shouldn't have giant corporate sponsors.
That would seem to make sense. But then again, there's apparently nothing in the $3.73 trillion that is expendable whatsoever, except for NASA. So apparently.
My last closing thought on this, though, Greg, is that we do not have a vendetta against Elmo. I have a vendetta against Bert for his ties to Al-Qaeda. And ridiculous as that sounds, I can show you the photo, Greg, because there is a real story that goes with this. So somebody years and years ago wanted to do a joke about how Bert from Bert and Ernie is evil. So he started like kind of photoshopping Bert next to all of history's greatest monsters and Stalin and Hitler and all this stuff. And he put him next to a picture, the stock photo of Osama bin Laden. So post 9/11, crazy Islamists all around the world are holding rallies to say, yay, Al-Qaeda. And some nut goes onto the internet to find pictures of bin Laden. And he downloads this one of him next to Bert. So in some like AP photo of this Islamist rally, you see people carrying signs of bin Laden. And right next to him is Bert from Bert and Ernie. And that's the proof we needed to prove that, you know, this is why we need a military strike on Sesame Street immediately.
Absolutely.
Never mind cutting federal funding. That's just step one. Airstrikes on Oscar's can are the next step, I believe.
I guess so. And Ernie's got to be a collaborator. If he hasn't turned Bert in by now, he's got to be in on
it. I was going to say, some awful suspicious connections there.
Yeah, clearly. Well, I guess that ends the story and the debate over PBS. We clearly needed to fund them for that, if nothing else. Jim?
Hey, by the way, Greg, I just got a cease and desist letter from the Children's Television Workshop. I don't know.
Exactly right. All right. Well, try to avoid the terrorism connections with your kids today as they play with their Sesame Street toys, and we'll talk again tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Join us tomorrow for the next 3 Martini Lunch.